black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm going to die out here. No one's ever going to know.
And I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me. And this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you tonight. Going to be speaking to Eric, who had an encounter in Canada, and he was near the Fraser River. And I get a ton of reports near that Fraser River drainage system. And also I'll be speaking to Blake. And Blake had an encounter down in the south here in the United States when he was out hunting. And one of these creatures was walking up a hill, and he had seen the creature. He thought it was another hunter coming up. Very, very fascinating account. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out sasquatchchronicles.com. You can become a member, get additional shows, and at the top is the shop. You don't have to be a member to go into the shop, but a lot of cool merchandise up there, shirts, sweatshirts, beanies, a lot of cool swag gear up there. So if you get a chance, check it out. And if you're coming to the International Bigfoot Conference, I'll probably bring a lot of gear with me. I'm kind of working on a gift for the members of the site, so I'll probably talk more about that as we get closer to it. I don't want to make any promises yet, but I'm working on something special for the members. But even if you're not a member of the website, hook up with me down there. If you go to the internationalbigfootconference.com, you can get your tickets. It's September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Here in Washington State, and I hope to see you guys down there. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Eric to the show. Eric, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you being here. If you would, I know your encounters took place in Canada. If you would, kind of tell us what, you know, give us a little background. What were you doing there? And then just kind of walk us into the encounter, if you would.
Yeah, it was about 10 years ago. I was up in Canada. I'm American, but I was living in Canada for a little bit. I found a good job up there in Vancouver just before the Olympics because everybody wanted some renovations done, which is what I do mostly. So, you know, I took advantage of that. But I had a buddy who worked with me whose family owned a logging company. He wasn't working for the family at the time, but we kind of did some side jobs for his dad, and that's kind of how we ended up out there having this encounter. So his dad needed some equipment to picked up out on the Fraser River or near the Fraser River, a little bit north of an area called Boston Bar, which is just north of Hope. So we ended up out there and we're like, well, you know, we'll go out there on the weekend. We'll make it a little camping trip. We'll do some fishing, have a good time, you know. So we had all our camp and stuff and we actually brought a rifle, which might have turned out to be a little bit of a blessing, but we were out there and we got out there to where the equipment was and we got it loaded up and we did some fishing the rest of that day. And then that night we were camped on the side of this logging road. There was a little cutout, which I think was probably like a landing from when they had logged that area, you know, a lot earlier than what they were doing. They were just doing some select logging, picking up some stuff and, you know, trying to clean out some stuff in that area. So they're camped up there. We had a little setup. My buddy had a Unimog. I don't know if many people know what that is, but it's an old Mercedes military type truck that was actually set up to be a logging truck. So I had a crane attachment on the side of it. So that's, we had picked up some like job boxes that were full of some stuff and loaded into his truck. And then had a canopy off the one side that we were just camped under. We were pulled up along this little hill behind that landing and then had the canopy out and we were facing the road with our little camp set up. And everything was good. It was about, I don't know, maybe 9:30 at night. We were, you know, just sitting around talking. We had a little fire going, nothing too big. And we hear a strange sound in the back of the truck. Like, and we were like, what was that? And first we couldn't figure out what it was. And then we were looking that way. And again, we hear the noise and then see this rock go rolling by the back of the truck. So we're like, what the heck? You know, so we get up and we walk out there, grab a flashlight, and we're looking around, looking up the hill. We don't see much. We're standing there. And then this pretty good-sized rock goes whizzing right by my buddy's head. And we're like, at this point, we're like, who's out there throwing rocks? And my buddy kind of yelled up the hill, I don't know what you think you're doing out here and why you're throwing rocks at me. I mean, he just, you know, went off a little bit. And, you know, then we didn't hear much, and we went back, sat down, you know, and a couple minutes later, rocks again. This time they actually hit the other side of the truck. My buddy gets pretty mad, you know, he's a, you know, likes his truck and doesn't want people throwing rocks at it. So this time we get up, he grabs his rifle and goes out there, and he's like, I'm not playing. I'm not going to hurt anybody, but, you know, leave us alone, get out of here. And he fires a shot off up into the air. At this point, we hear like a bulldozer going through the trees up there. I mean, it's crazy, just smashing and, you know, trees snapping, and it's intense. And then we hear this yell, growl. I mean, it was so loud, you wanted to cover your ears, and you could feel it. So at this point, we're like, okay, that's not having this little conversation with herself. That's not a person. That's not quite a sound I've really heard a bear make. But bears don't throw rocks. I mean, and I, prior to this, I mean, I wasn't really like a believer or someone who thought Bigfoot existed. And I was like, I have no idea, man. You know, I don't know what's going on. And we're both a little freaked out. We ended up sleeping in the truck instead of outside, which was a little extra layer of protection, which was probably a good thing. So the next morning, we finally fell asleep, but I mean, we slept a little bit. The next morning, we decided just to get out of there. And so we load up the truck with our camping stuff that we had left outside and everything else. And we get going down the logging road, and maybe about a half mile from where we were, or maybe a kilometer or so, since this happened in Canada, there's this big tree just pushed down over the road, wedged in between two trees on the other side. There was no wind or anything that night. And it was a solid tree that, you know, looked like it was, had no reason to fall, you know. So that got us a little more freaked out, and we didn't quite know what to do. But I mean, we had chainsaws and everything, so I ended up being the one getting the chainsaw, and my buddy kind of stood guard, standing in the back of the truck with his rifle, because we didn't know what was out there. And I got the tree cut, and I got it moved out of the way with the truck and a strap. And at about that time, when I was like, all right, we're ready to go, he's just like, look up there on that hill. And I can barely see it. I don't have, he's looking through a scope because he saw something moving up there. And he tosses me his rifle to look at this hill that's kind of down. There's a little ravine next to the logging road that's kind of cut out on the ledge. And then it dropped off a little below us and then, you know, came up again the other side. And there was a little clearing and then a tree line. And in that tree line, you could see two Sasquatches standing there, half, you know, kind of behind trees, peeking out, looking at us across the way. And we were both like, dude, that's Bigfoot. You know, I guess he never had an encounter. He wasn't really a believer either until that point, you know, and you're looking at this thing and you can see it right there, you know, a couple hundred yards away from you, basically. So we just got in the truck and got out of there the rest of the way. But I mean, it was like another, you know, 45 minute drive down this logging road. But I mean, that was pretty much the end of it after we saw him. We got that tree out of the way. And then we were just like, okay, those things exist. That's, you know, pretty much my encounter there.
No, yeah, it's interesting. I get a lot of reports from the Fraser River area, and I don't know Canada really well. I mean, I know certain areas of it pretty well, but the Fraser River I know is a huge river, and I get a lot of reports from there. I've talked to Dr. John Benernuggle about it, and he told me that whole river system is notorious for sightings. But let's say the term Sasquatch doesn't exist, and you were to explain to someone what you saw in that scope, how would you describe to them what you saw in that scope?
Well, that was an area we had just been in ourselves, and it's kind of a silly game we used to play. My buddy is much shorter than me, and we were marking off this area with some plastic, you know, bands that you put around the tree. And I always put him up where he can't reach. I'm about 6'2". He's about 5'7". So the funny thing is, they were like two trees over from where I had tied a band that I could reach as high as I could reach at 6'2". And that was about the height of their head. So, I mean, that's a good 8 feet or seven and a half, 8 feet. And that's about how tall they were. And they were color-wise, one was brown, and the other was more of kind of a slightly reddish brown, but they're covered in hair. They were thick. I'm a big guy, and I would have been, you know, dwarfed next to these things. So just massive, hairy, two legs. It wasn't a bear. They were standing up. They were looking at you. It was crazy. I mean, I know there's people out there that look for him, but I don't think I want to go looking for him.
No, I hear you on that. And, you know, it's one of those things to where, you know, kind of shocks people, especially when I always tell people, if you're looking for these things, you'll probably find them. I don't think it's hard to find them as like a lot of people think. But when you're out there and then you don't really believe in Sasquatch, something starts throwing rocks at you. I mean, I can just tell from your friend's reaction. He wasn't really a believer in Sasquatch. Kind of sounds like you guys thought someone was screwing with you.
Yeah, I mean, what else would throw rocks besides a person, you know? And they weren't, like, rolling down the hill. They were in the air, you know, flying through the air, you know, so.
Did your friend ever talk to his family about it? I know they own a logging company. Have they never heard of this? Have they never run into this before?
You know, we kind of mentioned it to his dad, not quite that we saw Bigfoot, that some strange things had happened. He kind of told his dad like a watered down version of the story. I don't think he quite got to the end where we saw actually, you know, looking at him. And his dad's like, yeah, you know, stuff like that been known to happen, you know, and his dad wasn't too surprised by any of it, but, you know, we didn't actually use the words Sasquatch or Bigfoot or anything like that, you know. And I've only told a couple of people this story besides you, so you know, I'm not trying to tell everybody.
No, I hear you. Well, I appreciate you sharing it. Did he change your mind as far as going out there anymore in the woods and camping in a tent?
I mean, I love being outside, and it's just I have to do it. You know, I still camp now. I live in Arizona, you know, so sightings are, I know there's been a few here, but, you know, they're much few and far between. But, I mean, I never go camping without a rifle of some kind or even a handgun, but usually a rifle just because. And I would say I don't go as far out as we used to, like, back then. But, you know, I mean, I got a family now, and you know, I stick to well-traveled areas, maybe just a little bit outside that, but, you know, I'm not going clear out in the backcountry like I used to anymore.
Yeah, no, I understand. I wanted to ask you, too, when your friend fired off the shot, so this thing was going nuts, knocking trees over and stuff, did it just quiet down after that?
Yeah, I mean, we heard it. He fired the shot, you know, up in the air, like no, not aiming at anything, and then we heard something running through the woods going away from us up the hill, and then after that, it quieted down for a while. And we didn't hear too much after the scream or growl or whatever you want to call it. And I mean, by the time that we got to all that, I mean, I kind of told it pretty quick, but that was pretty close to midnight by that time that he fired the shot and everything. So, you know, after that, we didn't hear much and we pretty much got in a truck and we were sitting there for a while and didn't hear anything. And eventually we both fell asleep in the truck. So, you know,
yeah,
maybe it came back around, but we didn't know.
It's a little unnerving, too, to I've been in situations like this, and I talked about it on Friday's show, where you're heading down a road, and then you know you've just come down that road. I know it wasn't quite like your guys' situation, but I've come down, I've gone up looking areas, and then I'm heading my way back down, and as I'm coming down, there's a tree across the road. And I'm like, okay, this isn't a deadfall tree. It's not like the wind press. This isn't natural. Something pushed the thing over.
Yeah, like that was a healthy tree. There was no wind. Might have been a breeze, but nothing blowing down, you know, a tree that was probably, you know, 14 to 18 inches round, you know, and then wedged perfectly in between those other two trees on the other side of the road. So we couldn't move it that easy. I mean, we had to get out and cut it, like I said. So, and I mean, we definitely knew something put that there. There was no reason for that tree to be, you know, fall over that night.
Yeah, and you can tell from the encounter of your retelling the encounter, you guys must have known something was up, because you get two guys out and you think two guys would go cut up the tree and move it, and you know, because it's kind of a two-man job. I mean, it can be a one-man job, but it's a lot easier if you have two men, but for one guy to stand back there with a gun while you're cutting up the chainsaw, that should tell people who are listening, you guys must have really been rattled at that point.
Right. I mean, this is, like I said, my friend's family owned a logging business. He grew up out in the woods, you know, working for his dad. He actually ended up, you know, he, at the time he wasn't working for his dad, but like I said, he always did little side jobs or whatever. And, you know, his dad gave me some extra cash, which was nice for helping out. But he went back, and him and his brother ended up taking over the logging business. I mean, so he's still out there. But I mean, and I grew up, like I said, I've always loved, you know, being outside. I grew up mostly pretty much in the area I live in, but Arizona is really diverse. I mean, I'm down in Phoenix on the edge of town, but you got the desert right outside of town. You get, you know, a little more outside of Phoenix, about an hour. You get what we call the high desert. And then what surprises people a lot about Arizona is, you know, up north we have forests, pine, deciduous forests, you know, up in the mountains of Arizona. So, I mean, I've been camping my whole life. I, you know, camped when I lived in Canada, you know, so, and, you know, I think for two guys that have grown up in the woods, you know, to be that rattled, just because, like I said, that sound is like that we heard was unbelievable to the both of us, like nothing I've ever heard ever. And you could feel that scream. So, I mean, it was intense. And we both knew at that point that something was up for sure.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And, you know, that's the thing is I've been talking about the last couple of shows. When you hear a scream, when you hear these things scream, you know, or vocalize for that matter, you know, something's not right. I mean, it's just not, it's not a cougar. It's not a, you know, it's not a bear. It's not a fox. It's not a, you know, when you hear it, and you're right. You do feel it. You feel it as much as you hear it. And it's fascinating too, because I've heard witnesses describe the scream many different ways. Most of the time they'll say it just screamed at me, but I've had a lot of witnesses, especially recently, They'll say it turned into a roar or it turned into a low guttural growl, but it starts kind of at a high-pitched scream. Now, when you guys heard that, was it just a scream?
Well, no, it definitely started out higher. I mean, it wasn't high-pitched, but it started out higher and then went down to, like, that rumbly roar where you could really feel it. The only thing I could describe it as is, like, you know, when you're really close to a big bassy speaker or something, like, you could feel that in your chest. That was the same kind of similar feeling, you know, like you could feel the sound in your chest, basically.
Yeah. Do you ever talk to him now about it? Or are you still in contact with him?
We're still somewhat in contact. You know, we don't talk regularly, but every now and then, you know, we'll chat on the phone or shoot a couple of emails back and forth. But as far as like that, I don't think we ever really talked about it except for, you know, once or twice within a few weeks after it happened. And then we just kind of don't talk about it. I don't really know how you'd kind of bring that up. I mean, I guess we could since we were both in that situation, but, you know, we just, it's never really been a topic of conversation, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, and I understand that. I wanted to ask you, too, what your impression was of this tree being placed across a road. Did you feel like it was a trap, or did you feel like it was just more of a way to annoy you? What was your feeling, your gut feeling at the time when you saw this tree and then you guys look up through the rifle and you see two of them watching you guys? What was going through your mind?
Well, the other thing about a tree is there was a blind turn. So if you came around that corner too fast, you would have hit that tree. Fortunately, the vehicle we were in, not too fast, you know, so we saw the tree, we stopped. I mean, and it was a hard stop, but we didn't hit the tree, you know, so I don't know, maybe to annoy us, could have been a trap if we hit it. I don't know. But I mean, that was really unnerving too. Aside from the scream, that was like the most, once we had looked at it, we're like, okay, something pushed this over. I mean, you could see the roots were torn right out of the ground, right where the tree had been growing. It was just pushed over. It was just unnerving, especially for my buddy, you know, someone who knew kind of, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, how trees would fall or what would cause trees to fall growing up in the logging business. I mean, he was like, no, dude, something pushed or pulled, or, you know, this tree was deliberately knocked over. And in the space it was, you know, just the width of this little logging road, you know, I can't think of a way for people to push that down before we saw them, you know, because you could get a truck and get a strap, but you couldn't get a truck up the hill above the road where you would need to be to pull down this tree, you know. So just to push that tree, I don't know, it's, even now, when I think about it, it kind of brings back those feelings, you know, like that anxiety. And
yeah, it's just unnerving.
Actually, so, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know after Woody and I had our encounter, I can't remember how, if it was a month later or it was a couple of weeks later. It was relatively within that same time period. We'd gone up during the day, and we were trying to get the actual GPS location of our encounter. And we had driven up past the spot of the encounter and kept driving a little bit. And then on our way down, we had just passed us. We were on the, there's only one road in and one road out, basically.
Right. Kind of the same situation we were in.
Yeah. And we'd went up and we'd turned around and we'd started heading back, and there was a tree in the middle of the road, and my heart sank. I was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I didn't know if I was going to break down in tears, you know, cause we just had this horrendous encounter recently, and then we were up there during the day, and now there's a tree across the road, and we had just driven past there, and that tree was not, it was placed there. It wasn't just a deadfall tree. It had been placed there, but it was small enough to where both of us could get out and move it. But it was probably the longest 20 seconds of my life getting out of the truck and moving that tree. I really didn't want to. And my feeling at the time was like, are they trying to trap us up here? Are they trying to like create a roadblock to where we have to get out? What's the intention here? What's, you know, and we didn't see anything that day or even hear anything that day, but it bothered me. I remember another time when I was in Texas, we were heading down this road, and we've been getting vocalizations all night long. And I was with Bob and Mo and all those guys down there. And as we were, I don't remember if we were coming in or going out, but something had put a tree across the road. And it was a dead tree, but something had placed it there. It wasn't like it just fell over. And so we had to get out and move it. But it's unnerving when you see that, because you know you got to stop and you got to move this thing. And I would imagine from the night before, when you are having rocks thrown at you and not really sure what's going on, trying to process it, and now you're leaving, there's a tree across the road. I would imagine your heart sank at that moment.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's the fastest I ever bucked a tree in my life, you know, getting out there. You know,
yeah, no, and I don't blame you. I don't blame you. That's probably the fastest cutting down of a tree, or, you know, cutting up a tree you've ever done. But it is unnerving. And again, that Fraser River, that whole river system through there, I get a ton of reports from that whole area. You know, I'm glad you had the experience, but be safe when you're out. Obviously, you know that these things are out there. So there's only two things that throw rocks. One is a person and the other one's Sasquatch. And so you got to be careful at night, you know. But I appreciate you coming on, Eric. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next up on the show, I want to welcome Blake. Blake, thanks for coming on.
No problem, man.
Now, I appreciate you being here. I know your encounter took place in Arkansas when you were hunting. If you would, for the audience, let's kind of walk into it. Tell us what happened. What did you see?
Well, I think I was I want to say 12 or 11. I don't really remember what year it was right offhand. I'd have to sit down and pencil the paper to that one. But I was up in Arkansas. South Arkansas, and I was up visiting with my grandparents, and it was actually the week of my birthday, which is in December. Anyway, so my dad took me the morning of my birthday and put me on a stand, which really wasn't a stand. It was more like a chair with some burlap wrapped around it. Anyway, I got in the stand that morning and had a doe come by, and I shot at her, and I missed her. Me and my dad went down there and we looked for blood, didn't find blood. And, you know, we looked around, didn't find any scuff marks where she had stumbled or anything like that. So we called it a clean miss and headed back to the house. And we got back there and I ate a breakfast. I told my dad, I said, well, I'm going to go down here and squirrel hunt for a little while. And I had a single shot, 20 gauge. He said, okay. He said, walk down this dry creek bed. And there's a bunch of them in there because there was a bunch of pin oaks and white oaks and red oaks all through the property that they had. So I threw my squirrel vest on and I'm going to start walking down this creek bed. And as I was leaving the house, I remember I could see my breath as I exhaled because, you know, it was so cold that morning. By this point, it's probably, if I had to guess, probably around 10 o'clock, maybe 10:30, pushing 11 o'clock if I had to give it that much. But anyway, their property, if I can remember right, was about 20, maybe 30 acres. Might have been a little bit more. I can't really remember. But it butted up to my grandpa's, on my mom's side, deer lease. And it was a giant deer lease. Anybody that's from around there knows exactly what I'm talking about, because it's not hard to find. So I started walking down this dry creek bed, and I think I'd been walking for probably about an hour. And I got to a point in the creek bed where the oak trees up top kind of made a canopy over it. I was sitting there, and I wasn't sitting there. I was walking there, and I thought I saw a squirrel jump a tree because I saw a branch move. And anybody who squirrel hunts knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, so I was probably about 10 yards away from where I thought I'd saw the tree branch move. So I walk over there and I'm standing underneath it and I'm looking around. I don't hear anything and I don't see anything in either one of the trees. And I was like, God, wait, man, well, that's weird. You know, cause usually when you're squirrel hunting, they're kind of just, you know, erratic. They'll do whatever they want to do. And they'll jump around, bounce around from tree to tree, make a lot of noise. I get up under the tree and I don't see anything and don't hear anything. And I guess maybe 15, 30 seconds goes by. And on my right-hand side, I hear a noise, and it sounds like kind of like a little bounce, almost like a squirrel sounds when he's kind of bouncing around in the leaves. And it wasn't real loud, but it wasn't exactly quiet. It was kind of, it honestly, it sounded just like a squirrel bouncing in the leaves. I was like, well, maybe that's where he's at right there. On both sides of this creek bank, it was probably 5.5 to 6 foot on both sides. And I don't remember how tall I was at that point. I was probably close to 5 foot. I'm 6 foot now, but I couldn't see over it. Anyway, so I'm standing there and I'm hearing this sound on my right-hand side. A couple of seconds goes by and it's getting closer, and I'm realizing it's getting a little bit heavier. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it's a deer coming trotting through the woods. And another 5-10 seconds goes by and it's getting closer and it's sounding heavier. And I'm like, okay, well, am I on somebody's property? Is somebody fixing to walk up on me? Because at that point, I'd kind of lost all sense of direction to where I was at. I knew I was just following the creek bed forward, and home was the other way, you know. Anyway, I'm thinking that I might be on somebody's property, or, you know, somebody's hunting right here, and they heard me coming through here. I didn't know. So, you know, my heart rate's kind of jumping up a little bit, and I'm getting a little anxious, and it's getting closer. And by this point, I've probably heard the walking sound for probably, or a sound period for probably about a minute or so. Probably another 15 seconds goes by, and I realize that, you know, this is getting to the point where this got to be a man coming up through the woods. Another thing I want to mention about this, on my right hand side, I don't know if anybody's familiar with forestry, but when the timber company comes in and cuts land, they'll always replant. And, or I say cut land, they cut timber, and they'll always replant. And the first year, I think the pine trees will probably go, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 feet at the most, if you've got a lot of water and a lot of sun. These new growth pines on my right hand side were probably 5 foot tall at the most. And in some parts they were a little bit shorter. But it went from new growth pines to solid like red oaks and pin oaks and white oaks, and it was just like a big oak flat, you know. And then where I was hearing this noise, that it went from the oak flat to just solid pine trees. You know, and I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. You get in pine trees so thick you can't see 10 foot at all, you know, away from you.
And I imagine there was a ton of undergrowth too with all of the new cutting.
Yeah. So anyway, it's getting to the point where it's right on me, and I'm thinking I'm fixing to see a blazed orange hat come up over the creek bank. Well, as I'm standing there, I'd actually backed myself up to the other side of the creek bank, and I had my back kind of resting on it, and had my shotgun laid across my arm. And as I'm watching, this noise is getting closer and closer and closer, and all of a sudden, I start to see just a little black. I don't want to call it a head because I didn't know it was a head at that point. But I saw a black, I don't want to say shadow. I guess we can call it a shadow. But I saw this black kind of figure coming up, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, is this a bear? Because there's bear in that part of Arkansas. He's steadily coming up, and I'm steadily hearing this noise, and it done got to the point where it sounded like he was dropping cinder blocks in the leaves with every step it took, you know. It was heavy, huge. And it comes up, never missed a stride, and it got all the way up to where I could see its belly button. I'm guessing that's the kind of the region that it was. I didn't see anything lower than that. But when he come up, he wasn't even looking at me. I call him a he. I don't know if it was a he or not. But he wasn't even looking at me. It was looking to the left. And I'm in awe at this point. I had no idea what I was looking at. And it looks to the left, and it looks back right. And I think at some point, I snapped a twig or I crunched a leaf or something. And as soon as I did that, he snapped back and looked dead at me. And when he did that, another thing I forgot to mention, when he was turning and looking left and right, it didn't turn its neck. It turned its torso. And I don't know if you've ever had any neck problems, but you can't turn your neck. You have to turn your back with your head.
Yeah. Or you see you see a lot of weightlifters do that. Guys that are too many steroids or lifting too much.
Right. And they can't. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. And so that's what this creature did.
That's exactly what he did. And so when he turns his neck, or I'm sorry, didn't turn his neck. When he turned his torso, I don't know if you've ever seen the cartoons where like the bull snorts steam out of their nose.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that's what he did. And when you turn, you're going to kind of exhale when you turn a little, especially if you're that big, you're going to exhale a little bit. And when he did that, I could see the steam come off out of his nostrils. And I was like, oh my God, this is something I've never seen before, you know? And, I kind of went into a daze after that. It was kind of like, it was spotty of what I remembered. Cause I remember running back to the house. And I've been walking for about an hour, so I was probably about a quarter mile away from home because I walked pretty slow at that point. But because when you squirrel hunt, you don't want to walk very fast; you make too much noise. I'm guessing I probably ran about a quarter mile, and I got about 300 yards away from the house, and I stopped to catch my breath. And I was right on the edge of where the property finally started to open up, to where you could see like really, really good, you know, through the woods. And any deer hunter knows what I'm talking about. When you got them flats where you can see for 50, 60 yards and it just looks perfect, you know, that's kind of what I'd gotten into. And I could see the house from where I was. Well, I stopped to catch my breath, and on my left-hand side, I could kind of hear like a rustling sound. And I was like, man, that's him. He's right there. And what really scared me is, you know, I just had an encounter with something I'd never seen before. And then I'm running back to the house, and he's on my left-hand side. It was crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's one of those things that terrifies you. I wanted to ask you, was it on two legs the whole time, or did you ever see it on all fours?
When he come up on the right hand, well, before I say this, it was really weird to me. I don't even know what I would call it. I guess you can call it a Bigfoot. But when he come up over the creek bed, and I was sitting there watching him come up. It was really funny to me. I say funny, but it was scary then. But I hear about all these people talking about how they have such a big stride. But it didn't seem like to me he had, you know, that giant of a stride. I don't know if he was if it was a younger one or if it was a female or what. But when every step he took, he only came up about probably 6 inches at that. That's what really gets me is I listen to all these encounters and people talk about them having 5 foot strides and 6 foot strides. And I don't know if it was just because of the hill right there as it come up over the creek bed, but I don't know. It might've been a younger one. I'm not real sure.
Yeah. I think coming up over a hill like that can limit your stride too. I mean, whether you're Sasquatch or not, you're moving up a hill and your stride's going to be cut in half or less. You know, even us, our stride's going to be cut in half walking up a hill. So this thing, so he was on two legs the whole time?
He was on two legs the whole time that I saw. When he was kind of, I say, bordering or following, I don't know if he was following me. It was more like, I think he was just, you know, either making sure I went where I was supposed to go or making sure I went where he wanted me to go, so on and so forth. I don't want to call it follow, you know, it was kind of like bordering and watching. But yeah, I don't think he ever went on four, you know, legs that I saw.
So for someone who's never heard, let's say the term Sasquatch doesn't exist, Bigfoot doesn't exist, how would you describe to someone what you saw? Were you able to see the face? Can you talk about the arms? I mean, was there anything that stood out to you about this thing beyond it just being weird?
Right. I did not see the face. That was the one thing that's what always gets to me about the whole situation. You know, I've heard a lot of people say they see one, they want to see another. I don't want to see another one. I've seen my fill of them. I don't want to see them anymore. But that's, you know, we had this conversation earlier, and I told you, you know, Wes, I didn't see the face. That's what really got me. And I think I described it as almost like dreadlocks on the head, and they came out over the face, and or where I'm guessing the face was. I don't know because I didn't see it. But the only thing that I did see that really stuck in my mind was the nose. And I know you've seen the picture or the description of them and us, that creature.
Yeah.
If you could make that nose a little bit more pointy, that's exactly the nose that I saw. Because I remember when it came out or when he did the artwork on it, I saw it and I was like, whoa, if you could paint that nose a little bit more pointy, that's exactly what I saw, and had some more hair on the face, that's it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, there is a lot of witnesses that have that type of description. They'll say the head was like a mop. And sometimes I've talked to hunters and they'll say, well, I saw a nose. It looked like a human nose. And then I saw lips and that's about it. I didn't see its eyes. I really didn't see, it had so much hair on its face. How big was this thing, do you think?
If I had to guess from what I saw, which was the belly button region up, that's what I'm guessing. That's what it was. I'm not real sure. I wasn't up 5 foot away from him. I didn't see him that close. But from the belly button up, I'd give him at least 5 feet, maybe 4.5. I'm 5 feet. That was a long time ago. You know, I'm not real sure, so don't quote me on that. But
no, I understand.
That's what I'd give him.
No, I understand. I know sometimes when you look back, it's kind of hard to, you know, it was just bigger than a lot of guys, especially guys that have seen it when they were younger. They'll say, well, I don't know, it was about as big as my dad or bigger. And sometimes it's hard to put a weight and a height.
A number to it. Yeah,
exactly. And I get it. Did you tell anyone about this? Did you go home and pull your dad off to the side and say, hey, listen?
You know, that's actually kind of funny you brought that up. My mom actually divorced my dad. Or I don't know if she divorced him or he divorced her at some point along the line. But I never really had that much, that many conversations with him about things other than, you know, family life and stuff like that. But he actually called me, I'd say it was about 3 years ago. We were having some stuff happen on the property that I was living at the time. And I was telling him about it, and he said, well, you know, they're out here at your grandma's place. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, man, they're here. And I asked him what he knew, and then I finally broke down and told him. And he was like, well, why didn't you tell me? I was like, man, I didn't want you to call me crazy.
Yeah, that is nuts. But, and that encounter happened on your grandmother's property, correct?
That's correct.
Oh, wow. So did your dad see him? I mean, had he seen him before on that property?
My dad told me that he had seen him, I think what he told me was 3 times. He saw him twice while he was deer hunting and once while he was, I think, working on a truck or doing something. I can't remember what the third encounter was, but I don't think he ever had like an actual face-to-face encounter. It was kind of like at a distance a little bit. When I told him what happened to me, he was just like, whoa, I don't think I'd be able to deer hunt after that.
Yeah, I definitely get a lot of reports from that general region that you're talking about, a lot of reports. And a lot of the reports I get from the area are kind of aggressive. And it seems like,
you know,
this
you
one
know,
didn't
I,
really, wasn't.
No, you know, I hear that so many, on so many talk shows, actually. Because I listen to yours, and I listen to quite a few, many more. And, you know, with me living in Louisiana and Texas being on the left-hand side of me, you hear about all these aggressive encounters and so on and so forth. But, you know, I've never really gotten that vibe from them. I'm not saying they won't be aggressive at all, because it's a wild animal. I'm not going to call them an alien or anything like that. They're a wild animal. They're flesh and blood. But, you know, it's just like a dog. If you corner a dog and put him in a tight position, he's going to react the way you don't want him to. And I think a Bigfoot is the same way, the exact same way.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't always have to corner a dog for it to be aggressive either.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But you had, this wasn't your only encounter. You had two other encounters. Was it on a property or were you hunting when these other two things happened?
I was actually, this was only probably maybe 3 years ago, actually. The second one was. And we were, I was actually staying in Webster Parish, which, like I told you, it was about 45 minutes away from here. I don't want to give the exact location because if you live in Webster Parish, you know exactly where this is at.
And that's okay. You don't have to.
But anyway, we were getting ready for the upcoming deer season, and my cousin has about 20 acres in the middle of a heavily forested area. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, it was October, and it was probably the first part of October. And there's a little bit of public land around him. And, you know, the first part of actually, it wasn't the first part of October. It was the last part of September. I'm sorry. Because dove season had just stopped. And we're going to go ahead and start putting feeders out and putting cameras out for deer and trimming limbs on lanes and stuff like that. You know, getting the deer stands ready, making sure deer are coming through there and all, so on and so forth. But I was working for a construction company at that point. And I was getting off at about 4 o'clock, so that would put me getting back to Webster Parish at about 5 o'clock, give or take, with a little bit of traffic involved. And I stopped at a feed store, and I picked up some mineral blocks and some corn that I was going to put out. And I get back to the house, and I have a beagle, and he's actually a pretty good scent dog. But I have a beagle, and my cousin had a Catahoula cur. And when I got back to the house, I loaded all the corn up in another truck, and I drove down to one of our deer stands, and I took both the dogs with me. I opened the door, pulled up to the deer stand, and they both jumped out of the truck. You know, they were both young at that time, so they played around a lot, you know. I always carried a .45 pistol on my waist every time I'm down there. For snakes and, you know, so on and so forth. After what happened to me when I was younger, you know, I'm always protected at all times, no matter if I go in the woods or I'm not.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get out of the truck and they jump out. They're running around in the second pasture that we have out there where the deer stand is. And to the left of the stand, it was a big box stand. And to the left of the stand was a old logging road. And it wasn't real thick in there at all, except for on the left-hand side. Actually, that would be back behind the stand, if you want to get technical with it. But there was a creek that ran about probably 30, 40 yards from the stand. If you're sitting in it, it'd be on your left-hand side. And on the other side of it was private property. We had pictures of some good bucks coming through there, so I figured I'd go in there and trim limbs and, you know, put corn out, put a camera out and see what would happen. So as I'm trimming limbs and both of the dogs were behind me, probably 10 yards, I'm facing the woods that are behind the stand. And I'm trimming limbs through there, and I just happened to glance up, and I look, and I saw this stump. And I was like, I don't remember that stump being there on the side of that creek bed. And, you know, I didn't pay no attention to it. I kind of glanced back at the dogs. They seemed okay. So I went back to trimming limbs. Well, probably maybe a minute goes by, and I'd done trimmed 3 or 4 more limbs, and I was going to my next one, and I look back in the woods, and I see the same stump sitting there. But I looked at it a little bit longer, and it looked like this stump had two big eyeballs. And I was like, I know that's not what I think it is, because as soon as I saw what looked like eyeballs, I immediately thought of my previous encounter. I was like, that can't be what I think it is, and I trimmed the limb and I threw it on the ground, and I was staying calm. You know, I was in full control of the situation at that point. But I turned around and looked at my dogs, and they were just playing around. You know, they weren't stiff in the air, nothing. Didn't act like anything was wrong. So I turned around and I trimmed another limb, and it's still there. And I was like, oh my God, this can't be. And so I trimmed my last limb, and I turned around and looked back at the dogs, and I turned around and looked back in the woods, and it's gone. Totally gone. And I just dropped my limb trimmers. I got both the dogs, put them in the truck, and we cranked the truck and drove back up to the house. And my cousin gets back to the house, and I was telling him about what happened. And he asked me if I wanted to go down there. I said, no, I don't want to go down there. Gun or no gun, I'm not going back down there right now. So I went to work the next day, and the whole time I was there, I'm thinking, you've got to go back down there and just see if there's anything, you know, some kind of sign to tell you what it was. So I get off the next day. I do the same exact thing. I don't take the dogs. All I took was my pistol. I walk through the woods. I look on the side of this creek bank, and there ain't no stump there. That was obvious as soon as I looked in there. But as I looked down, I could see slide marks where something had slid off the bank. They put 1 foot down in the gravel and then jumped 4.5 feet into a pine thicket. Never made a sound. And now I was standing there and I thought to myself, if that was a man, there ain't no way he's going to jump from gravel. Because, you know, gravel is real loose and it'll smush in. It's just like sand.
Yeah.
When you jump from gravel or sand, either one you want to pick, you're not going to jump very high because you're going to lose a lot of velocity when you put your, you know, when you pick up off the ground. Well, I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, maybe he grabbed a tree when he, you know, jumped up on the edge of the creek bank. I looked for trees to be bent over and broke. Nothing. There was nothing.
Let me ask you, Blake, was this near where you had your other encounter? I mean, what kind of a distance are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about a 3-hour distance.
Oh, okay. So it's not even near where you had your other encounter.
No, this was in Louisiana.
Yeah, what did you think? I mean, especially when you look back and it's not there and there's no noise. That's a little troublesome, especially with this jump you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
What really got me is I hear a lot of people talk about how their dogs can sense them and they'll bark at them. But the dogs that I had there never even gave me a hint that there was anything wrong. And what really got me was the fact that he was there and he watched me the whole time that I was trimming limbs. He watched my dogs, watched me pull up in the truck. He had to watch me pull up in the truck. And how you just slide down the creek bank and put 1 foot in the gravel and slip out of sight with no noise. Now, I will give it this. Where he jumped into was a pine thicket. So you know good as well as I do, a pine thicket, you're not going to make any noise when you walk through it because it's so... The pine needles are so thick on the ground.
Yeah, it's going to muffle everything.
Exactly. So I will give it that. That's what really gets me about this is the first one that I had an encounter with made all the noise it wanted to. But the second one, I call it a second one. I'm not sure. I don't want to say it was a Bigfoot. I know for sure that I saw something that was gone when I turned around, that, you know, it wasn't there, and I saw the slide marks. So I'm pretty sure I had a good idea what it was, but that one never made a sound. That's what scares me is, you know, from one time you hear it, one time you don't. That's what gets me. And plus my dogs are there. I'd hate for some to have my dogs.
Oh yeah. No, I'm with you on with the dog thing, man. If I ever came across one with a dog, I would stand and fight. I would lose, but I would stand and fight just to protect my dog.
That's why I carry a big gun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's how far away was this thing from you when you were trimming those limbs?
If I had to guess, it was probably 30 yards. But, you know, that was actually the first time that I'd actually seen I don't want to say I saw its face, but I hear a lot of people talk about, and plus my friends talk about this, because they've seen them too. They talk about how big around the eyes are. And from where I was and where it was, they look like golf balls. They were real dark. They weren't like glowing or nothing like that. It was in the middle of the day. You know, I never saw the glowing eyes. All I saw was a big, round, dark eyeball. And, you know, it looked like they were planted on a face. I never saw a nose. I never really saw a face. But the color, I will say this, though. The color looked exactly like a burnt pine tree stump. And yeah. I don't want to say it was black, but it kind of had that grayish, blackish tint to it.
It's interesting you say that. I was just talking to a hunter, actually from your area, your general area. It's more East Texas, but, you know, your general region. And he was out hunting, and he had seen what he thought was a stump, almost identical to your encounter. I mean, I just talked to this guy last week. and he didn't want to come on the show, but it's almost identical to your encounter. He was actually hunting, and he was sitting down, and he was kind of taking a break, and he looks up and hears this stump, and he said it was probably about 50 feet from him, and he was looking at the stump, and he couldn't quite figure out what was odd about it. He goes, it just something wasn't right, and he kind of looked away and went back and looked at it, and he said all he saw was big black eyes. And, you know, this is the early morning, and he thinks he sees what his eyes. Same thing, not glowing or anything. He thought he saw eyes, and it was just a real odd-looking stump. And as he starts getting up, he said the stump stood up and looked at him. And that's when he realized, oh crap, that's not a stump. And he said what he saw was, he goes, imagine a gorilla with just a huge, kind of on your first encounter, he goes, just a huge mop on its head. He goes, the whole thing was covered in hair. The arms, he said the hair went down about 3 or 4 inches, and then the rest of the body, it really wasn't that long. It was kind of thin, and it just didn't look at him. And then he said it turned, and it was gone within like 4 or 5 steps. It was just gone. It ran back into the woods. But I find it fascinating because, you know, our brain really is a miraculous thing. I think our brain, when we see stuff like that, we try and go, that's a bear, that's a man, that's a stump. And then there's something that makes you stop and go back and go, okay, that's not a stomp, that's not a bear, and that's not a man. I don't know what that is. But it's kind of interesting how your brain tries to give you an answer right away with what you're seeing, even though deep down you know that's not really true. But I find it fascinating how the brain works in situations like this.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I've hunted my whole entire life. Since the time I was able to do it, I was hunting. And I hunt and I fish and I duck hunt. I do it all. But, you know, with being out in the woods that much, you pretty much know, you know, what's supposed to be there and what's not supposed to be there. And I will say this. I have been fooled a couple times. I actually heard a fox scream for the first time in my whole entire life about 2 years ago, and it scared the living crap out of me.
Yeah, they'll do that.
And I swore up and down. I was like, that's got to be a Bigfoot screaming at me right there. And my buddy that was with me, he's a little bit older than me. He said, man, that's a fox screaming. And I got home and I looked it up on YouTube and I said, that gum, you're right.
Yeah, no, foxes.
Like you said, the mind will play tricks on you.
Oh yeah, yeah, your mind will play tricks, and especially when you hear something weird. And foxes make weird noises. I've heard foxes make stuff you wouldn't think a fox could make, but they make some god awful sounds sometimes.
Oh, they do.
Well, tell me about your third encounter. Did this happen right after this one?
Actually, my third encounter was probably a month before I saw what I would call a Bigfoot down there by that creek. But it actually wasn't. All I heard was a scream, and I'll go ahead and tell you a story. It was a Friday night. I got off work, and I drove back up the same property. This was probably August, late August, maybe. You know, I'm just guessing here. I'm not sure on dates. But me and my cousin had, you know, we worked at the same place. So when we got off, you know, we would go get something to eat and then we'd go back to the house. Well, we got back to the house that night. It actually pretty late because we ended up having to go work on a truck. And we got back pretty late. I'm guessing it was probably 9:30 or so. We drank a few beers. I think we both had between us maybe 5 beers, if that, because we were both so tired. Anyway, so we decided we were going to drive out into the right-hand pasture, you know, park the truck, listen to music, and just relax a little bit because we've been uptight all day. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
And so we drive out there, and I had my truck, and he had his truck. And we get out, and I'd actually just started listening to your show at this point. And I was sitting there telling him, I was like, man, you know, them Bigfoot will scream at you. He's like, no, they won't. So, you know, just joking around. And I let out like 2 or 3 wolves, and they were horrible. As I'm standing there, I do this, and about 30 seconds goes by, and all of a sudden, dude, we hear it sounded like a woman scream, but it was just so high-pitched, and it wasn't long. Like I hear a lot of people talk about it. It wasn't long at all. It was probably, probably 10 seconds at the most, but it was just so high-pitched, and it felt like it had so much just body mass behind it. And I looked at him, and he looked at me. We jumped back in the truck. We drove back up to the house. We locked all the doors, shut all the window curtains. I think we loaded every gun in that house. We were so scared.
Yeah, it's when you hear these things scream, they can do that to you. And you know, the other thing, too, it's like I was just talking about this on Friday night show. If you go out there and you scream or you bang on trees or you're trying to get their attention, I always say be careful what you wish for, because you might just get a response back. Or if you go looking for them, be careful, because you might just run into them. You know, for you guys to hear a scream like that, I would imagine that would have had to been something to really shake you up, for you guys to get in the truck, drive back to the house, lock everything, and load all the guns. And when you hear these things scream, man, you feel it as much as you hear it. They are powerful when they scream.
That's kind of funny you mentioned that. I totally forgot about it. But when we actually heard it, I asked my cousin when we got back to the house. I said, "Man, did you feel that in your chest?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "That's what scared me more than the scream was the feeling I got." And I was like, "Golly, I'm glad I wasn't the only one that felt that."
Yeah, and you're right. That's what it's like when you hear the, and that's why I always say, you know, when you hear stuff like foxes or like cougars, it's not the same as when you hear one of these screams. I would imagine you put that fox up, that scream you heard the fox do against this thing, and you're probably talking apples and oranges.
Oh, yeah. Totally different. You know, it's actually funny. I actually play guitar, and I sing a little bit. I was in a band about 2 years ago. And when you hit a bass drum, and it, you know, it hits real hard in your chest, especially when you're close to it, that's exactly what it feels like, just that vibration.
Yeah, you're right. And it is. It's really unnerving to hear it. But, you know, be careful when you're out there. Not every encounter is going to be aggressive. I mean, I'll be first to say that. Not every encounter is going to be aggressive. But having said that, we just don't know enough about these things for anyone to let their guard down. There is encounters to where they don't harm people, or they might chase you out, or they might throw rocks at you. But there is encounters where they do attack. And I've had encounters. One was in Arkansas. I believe it was Arkansas or Oklahoma, where this guy just got attacked by one. It knocked him to the ground and got on top of him, and he ended up shooting it in the head with his .22. It didn't kill it, but it hurt it. And this guy got attacked for no reason. I mean, there was no reason other than a territorial response for this thing to come after this guy. He never pointed his gun at it. The moment he saw it, he thought it was a huge chimpanzee. And so he turns to go back to his truck and basically leave. He wants to get out of there. And this thing came after him. So you never really know the response you're going to get. Now, is that going to happen every time? No. I would say most of the time, they're probably going to sit. They seem to like to watch a lot. Observe people.
I think that's what scares me the most, is just knowing something's watching you and you don't know where it's at. Because they're so stealthy. They got to be stealthy.
No, and you're right, and that's the way it is. And then the other thing, too, you know, things that are unnerving, I guess just as a side note, is something this big really should make noise like your first encounter.
I agree.
But you hear a lot of situations like your second encounter to where people never hear them come. A lot of times I'll hear, here's a real common report. People are camping, and they never hear it come in. And then all of a sudden they start getting rocks thrown at them. They might get a vocalization, and then when it leaves, it sounds like a Mack truck leaving. Or, you know, when it starts throwing a fit, it sounds like a Mack truck. But a lot of times the campers will say, "I never heard it come in. I never heard this thing come in." And that's the unnerving part, man. With the size of these things, you would think it'd be like King Kong coming through the forest. And a lot of times it's not like that.
I know, man. I don't think I've ever been outside of Mississippi, but I hear all these people talk about these 800-900 pound Bigfoots, and I'm just like, I can't see that. But at the same time, you know, I never would have thought that, you know, I would see what I've seen. So, you know, I guess the possibilities are endless once you put your mind through it.
Well, yeah, and you would think, you know, a lot of those larger reports, I generally don't get from your area. Generally, those very large King Kong-type reports come from the Pacific Northwest. You start getting down south, and people will describe them, you know, 6, maybe 8 feet tall. 8 feet's kind of, generally speaking, the max. Not always, but, you know, generally speaking. And a lot of times people report them as just being very large, you know, bigger than they are. But kind of stringy too in the same breath, kind of like a runner or a basketball player. Keep in mind, bigger than your average person. But yeah, a lot of the reports down there, they aren't that big, but bigger than you or I.
Well, let me ask you something, Wes. I've actually seen, I don't want to call it tree structures, but the only reason I know what to call them is because I actually looked it up after I saw it. Just trying to put it in a, you know, a frame of reference. But I was walking down a trail one day. I'm not going to say where this is, because it's not very far from where I live now. But there's about 70 or 80 acres behind where I live. And I found what it was like a, I don't even know what kind of bush it was, but it was a bush. And it came up, and there was another bush on the left-hand side. And there was a twig, like, right straight across it. And what the weird thing that got to me was it was laid right in an arch on both the bushes. And when I walked up to it, I saw it, and I was like, man, that's weird. And I looked to see if the twig had another branch hooked to it or anything like that. I didn't see anything like that. It was kind of strange to me. So I just picked the twig up. I walked underneath it, and I laid it right back down where it was, and I kept going what I was doing, you know, looking around. I was actually trying to find a pond that I was told that was back in there because I like the bass fish. And I saw it, and I thought about it the whole time I was back there. And, you know, I never got an uneasy feeling, but I just saw it, and I said, man, that's really, really weird. So because I can't see the wind pushing it off a tree and making it land in both the arches at the same time or picking it off the ground and doing it. That's just, I can't see that happening. How do you feel about, I mean, do you think they make tree structures or twig marks or, you know, tree breaks or something like that? Do you actually believe that, or am I just crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I never used to really buy into the tree structures until I saw it for myself. And I think that they do it. I can think of one. The big one I saw in particular was here in Washington State on the Browns property. And I know that these guys didn't put this tree structure together. They're not that big of guys to be able to, what looked like a blind. It almost looked like a hunter's blind. And it didn't really make sense to me. I remember when I looked at it, I thought, well, I don't understand. That's not really a shelter. You're not going to lay under this thing, and it's not going to protect you from the rain. And the more I sat and I looked at it and kind of got inside of it and was trying to figure out, okay, why would someone create something like this? And it kind of hit me as I was standing there. I had perfect view of the house, and I could watch everything that went on in the house. And if you were at the house and you looked back, you would never see me because of this thing. I could stand there and you would never see, you'd never know I was there. And that's when it kind of hit me like, oh, I wonder if it's creating it for that. But you'll hear of I've had hunters who describe these tree structures, and I've even had hunters who've seen Sasquatches in the tree structures. And every time
You're
I've
kidding
asked,
me.
No, and every time I've asked them, I said there was one hunter in particular. I can't remember if it was Oklahoma. I can't remember where the state was right off the top of my head, but he had seen this tree structure, and he had seen what he said was a monkey inside the tree structure. But he said it wasn't really, it didn't make sense why it was in there. It didn't really make sense of, it's not really a shelter. And then it kind of hit him that it was next to the game trail. And he ended up leaving. But the point I'm trying to make is I had asked him, I said, well, why do you think it was? And he goes, I think it was like hunters use a blind. He's like, it almost like was just sitting there waiting for something to come down this trail. And the reason why he had seen this creature is the creature actually was kind of a grayish white color. So it stood out when he was looking into this tree structure because this thing stood out like a sore thumb right in the middle of it. And he said it was a gray and white monkey inside this tree structure. So I think that they do use it. I don't know that I've ever heard of someone. Actually, I've never talked to someone who said they saw them make it. But I do think that they do use it. I think a lot of the tree structures can be explained with weather, you know, weather damage, more natural.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that 100%.
But there is the ones where you see it and you're like, okay, I know a man didn't make that because there's no saw marks and this thing's breaking branches off and actually making, you know, unless Andre the Giant came down here and started snapping tree limbs off and was making himself a structure, I don't know what else could have made this thing. But why they use it or anything like that, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that baffles me about the whole situation because, you know, I can believe that Bigfoot is real and that it lives in the woods undetected from, you know, man. I'm not saying that science doesn't know it exists. I'm pretty sure they do after all this time. With all the millions and millions of reports there are, it's kind of hard not to believe that they are real because, you know, I've seen one. I think I've seen two. I'm not real sure about the second one, but I feel like 100% they've got to be real. And some of the things they do, just it makes a man think, you know, why would you do that? And it's just weird. They're so out of the norm. It's I don't know how to explain it.
No, it is. And I think that right there is the answer why more hunters don't shoot these things. Hunters aren't, you know, these crazy guys with guns in the woods like most people think.
Oh, no.
Hunters are very, as far as gun safety comes, they're probably the most gun safety people you'll ever meet in your life. And they generally don't pick off, you know, start firing off shots at something and they don't know what it is. But I think most hunters see these things and they think, okay, that's a man. Okay, that's not a man. Okay, that's a bear. That's not a bear. I don't know what that thing is, but I'm out of here. And I think that's mainly what happens with hunters when they're out there. I know on last Sunday's show, I had the teacher on, and one of the kids' questions was, why haven't more people shot these things? And I think that's the answer right there. You know, unless it turns and starts charging you, you're probably not going to fire off a shot because you're in awe. You're trying to figure out, you know, your brain's processing what you're seeing. And, you know, am I going nuts? Am I losing it? You know, all of these thoughts come through. And so I don't think the first thing is to want to shoot at one of these things. I just don't believe that.
Yeah, you know, my dad, he pounded in my head when I first started deer hunting. He said, do not shoot unless you know exactly what you're shooting at. And, you know, that's what I, because I take some people hunting with me, younger kids, and like my brother or my cousins or my younger cousins, and I'll tell them, you know, just don't squeeze the trigger unless you know exactly what it is. And I'm going to be honest with you, Wes, when my first encounter happens, I don't know if you've ever been so scared you can't function. Literally, that's exactly what happened. You can't function at all. It was just, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it again, but
no, I understand. Kind of becomes a blur for a moment. You know,
it does. Yeah. It really does. But, you know, the only time I think I would ever pull the trigger on one, if I ever saw it in, say, an open field when I was in a deer stand or something like that, is if I know I could, you know, cleanly kill it with no problem, you know, not have any flack afterwards. For some, you know, if that ever came down to it, like I watched the show Killing Bigfoot now, I agree with what them guys are doing. I like Jim Lansdale. He's pretty good. And I agree with what they're doing because, you know, it's science. I agree with that. But when it comes to things that, like, aren't harming you and, you know, not posing a threat towards you, it would take a little bit more for me to pull the trigger. Like I said earlier, you know, with it walking out in the field or something like that, you know, it would take a little bit more for me to pull the trigger on that. But if they're charging me, I'm just going to do what I got to do, whether I come out on the winning end or not. I'm pulling some triggers on that one.
Yeah, and I think that's how most people feel. And yeah, you're right about the guy, Jim Lansdale. All those guys, they're good guys. They're, you know, I know those guys get a lot of flack for that TV show, and it's a TV show. You know, it's entertainment.
Right.
Yeah, they're definitely out there, and I really appreciate you coming on, Blake, and talking about your encounters, and you know, I just can't thank you enough for coming on.
Oh, no problem, Wes. It's been a pleasure, man.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Until next time, everyone.
Some tone.